This episode of the Careering into Motherhood podcast was recorded with Helen Tupper from Squiggly Careers, right at the time before coronavirus really kicked off. You remember the time when we all thought it was everything was being overhyped and it was probably not going to affect us as much here in the UK. But I'm proceeding with releasing this podcast because I think when we come out of this incredible period, this concept of the squiggly career, which Helen is about to talk about, will be even more relevant and even more applicable to us as we start to rebuild our lives and our careers and go about daily life. Because the squiggly career is one that isn't linear. It isn't one that sees you going to school, university, into a job, proceeding through the ranks in a particular industry and staying there until retirement. Squiggly careers, as Helen will talk about, makes it acceptable to have stops and starts and rethinks and reevaluations of what your values are. And they undoubtedly change as you get older. And they undoubtedly change as huge things in your life have an impact on the way you view the world. So I'm going out with this podcast and I'm hugely grateful to Helen for her time. And I hope you will find some use and light relief as you listen to it. Well, I'm really grateful to you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Helen. It's great to have you here today. And I want to start with this, the whole concept. Some listeners may not know what exactly is a squiggly career and how did you come up with this concept?
Yeah, it is a really good question because I think people sort of, we don't mind, but people apply their own interpretations to it. In developing it, I guess our starting point in developing it was, it was in 2013, so it's a while ago now, and I was reflecting on my career and the career of the people that work for me with a friend who is now my business partner, but Sarah Ellis, and we were just having this conversation about what was the world of work that we were experiencing, what were some of the challenges that we were having, what were some of the opportunities, and we realised that the career that we thought we would have, this one that we thought would be sort of very linear, lots of promotions, success marked by kind of going up ladders. That was the kind of expectation of what a good career was. We realized that was looking less and less like our careers. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really the analogy of the career that we wanted anymore, like where there was some nirvana at the top of some ladder. That just didn't feel realistic. And actually, the most rewarding things that were happening in our careers were where we would stepped into places that we hadn't expected to be in. Mm. And whether that was organizations or functions where we were sometimes out of our depth or definitely out of our comfort zones, but actually really learning through the challenge and sometimes sort of through the failure. And what we realized that our careers weren't looking like these really predictable linear staircases. In fact, there were these much more natural and ever-evolving squiggles, and we said to each other, squiggly careers, this feels like our careers. They're much more fluid, they're much more flexible, they're much more ambiguous, and there's much more change. And we were sort of saying to ourselves, wow, isn't that great? This kind of squiggly career notion is giving us the opportunity to kind of craft a career that works for us. And then when we started to talk to other people, a lot of them identified with this idea of a squiggly career with more fluidity, more flexibility, more movement, but a lot of them felt different to how we felt. So they were like, yeah, my career is starting to look more like that and less like a ladder, but I don't feel quite as confident as you seem to. And I'm not quite sure how I navigate all this squiggliness. And that was where we realized there was an opportunity to really look at how we could help people to succeed in this squiggly career context.
And a lot of your clients, I know, are, or the people you advise and you talk to, are large businesses, large corporates, or people in those kind of roles. And I often think it feels, certainly in the recruitment industry, as though we are trying to still stretch people or push people into a very linear career. But how receptive have businesses been to this idea of more squiggle?
I think the recruitment thing's an interesting angle. In terms of the businesses, the businesses that we work with have been really, really receptive. I think partly because they recognise that, for example, 70% of people's engagement at work is down to the person that they work for. So they really, really want to help their managers to have really open conversations about people's careers and spot opportunities for them to develop in lots of different ways that don't require them to go on an expensive course or be promoted in structures which are trying to be less hierarchical. So a lot of organisations are almost out of necessity to increase engagement and retention and advocacy, are recognising that they need to think about careers differently and support the people that work for them differently. So, I mean, not every organisation's there, but a lot of the organisations that work with us have already got there, and now they're looking, you know, to us for support. So that's, you know, organisations like Money Supermarket, we work with the BBC, we work with a company called ADP, ASOS, lots of organisations. They've already got amazing learning programmes in, but they're really open to thinking about, how do we help people to take ownership of their career? How do we help managers have different career conversations? How do we almost have this career mobility in the company so people don't have to seek this squiggliness outside? So I actually think there's a lot of progressive thinking happening in organisations. They just need some support to put it into action. I think recruitment's really interesting, actually, because I think we've got some work to do. I'd love Amazing If to do some work with recruitment, because it's not such an easy sell for a recruiter. So it's easy to sell linear. You have a job which is X, and this person also has X on their CV. They'd be great. Match, match. It's an easy sell. Squiggly, less easy, because I'm sort of saying, okay, you've got a job which needs X, Y, Z, and this person's got a range of different things. I think they'd be really good. I think you should have a conversation. It's not quite such an easy match, but actually that person could be a much better long-term opportunity for the organization, because if they've got, you know, growth mindset, a capability and a capacity to keep learning, they're curious, they're really clear about where they add value, if they've got all of those talents, which are some of the ones, you know, we try and help people to develop, then that's so valuable for an organization rather than somebody maybe with fixed mindset and fixed qualifications.
Definitely. And I think it's really hard, because we all know that everything you're saying is, you know, makes perfect sense. And what I hear as well from my clients is that those are exactly the kind of people they want to bring in to their organizations. And yet I specifically work with a lot of parents or returning mothers, and, you know, they're really struggling with being challenged on squiggles within their CVs. And I think that brings us nicely onto the next topic. You know, it's quite easy to be, not easy, but you can be quite confident when you're in the space advising people. But, you know, I get lots of stories about people with gaps on their CVs, or they've had different career paths and they've been turned down for interviews. How do you become more confident and own your squiggly career when you're numb?
So probably two things here. And one I'll talk from experience, and the other I'll talk from sort of like practical things that will help people. So before I was running Amazing If, I had my own squiggly career, and I still have a very squiggly career. But that my squiggly career, for example, involved me working in several different functions. So sales, marketing, innovation, you know, set up new businesses for different organizations. My squiggly career also involved me working in different organizations. So I've worked in financial services, I've worked in FMCG, I've worked in oil and gas, I've worked in technology. So I have done several sort of pivots, if you like, in my career, whether it be functional organization. And each one of those has required me to sell myself and why I'm, you know, a good option for that organization, despite the fact that I might not have worked in that function or that organization before. And that, I think, is maybe some of the challenge that people have when they have a squiggly career where there's lots of this kind of movement or fluidity. And that doesn't have to be, you know, lots of different organizations. That could be just within a business. Somebody wants to work in different functions in the same business. The thing that really, really helps you to do that is for you to have confidence about your strengths and your values. And you can talk about that, how you get to that in a second. And also for you to have a really strong narrative. So for example, if I was to talk about some of my strengths, some of my strengths are about developing people, moving things quickly, and making things happen. So I can build teams very quickly. I can set initiatives up very quickly. I'm very good in times of change at kind of cutting through and delivering kind of quick impact. Now, I know that they're my strengths. I'm confident in talking about them. And when I'm going through an interview, so if I was going to work in a completely different industry or a different function, what I might acknowledge is, okay, I understand that as a candidate, I don't have 5-10 years of procurement experience in financial services. I understand that. However, these are some of the strengths that I bring, and these are why I think it's valuable knowing what I do about your business and what I do know about this function. And it's that narrative about what you're great at, why it's valuable, being really confident in articulating it, that can help you to have almost like a red thread through your squiggle, rather than it being like a separate, lots of separate isolated moves that you've made because you've not been sure what you wanted to do.
Yeah, that's really, really important point. It's something, you know, absolutely ring chimes with the things that we tell our candidates, especially when you have, you've got to bring to life a CV, which is effectively a piece of paper that will probably be looked at for around 15 seconds, 30 seconds. And in that 30 seconds, you have to tell your story about why you should, why you deserve a callback or a face-to-face interview. And I think you're absolutely right. So many people, when they're writing their CV, they're thinking of jobs almost independently, one after the other. Whereas if you can create that narrative and tell that story, that will help not only in your writing, but also then when you're sitting in front of a hiring manager and trying to get that interview.
And one of the things I think we talk about as well is, and it's difficult if someone's in a position of needing a job right now, but one of the things we tried to get people to think about is to nurture roles so that you don't need them. And what I mean by that is, because people don't look at your CV for very long, and because they might be looking at lots of CVs, we don't want you to just be a piece of paper. Mm. We want you to have been in their mind before that moment. And so this is about nurturing relationships in advance of you needing them. And one of the things that we talk about is, you know, exploring your career possibilities. So what I might think about now is, okay, what are some things that I'm interested in doing in the future? Mm. Maybe some interim learning and development work in one of the companies that we've been working for, maybe setting up some, I don't know, virtual learning communities or lecturing in university. They might all be possibilities that are just interesting to me. And now what I would do is spend time exploring those in advance of me needing to do something different. Mm. And we would have what we call curious career conversations. So I might set up a conversation with somebody in one of those different areas, and I would talk about and try and understand what a day in the life is like, sort of what the context of that opportunity is like, because we all make lots of assumptions about what it's like to work in a place or what it's like to do a certain job. And sometimes we get there and that assumption isn't true, and that becomes a bit of a difficult point. So find a way to explore the reality of the role. The second thing to talk about is, you know, these are my strengths, this is what I'm great at. Is that what you need in this team, in this function, in this organization? And some people might say, yes, you know, that's exactly, Jane, that's an amazing fit for what we do. That's brilliant. Or they might say, yeah, a little bit, but we also look for people who are X, Y, and Z, and that would be important. And that's up to you then about whether you want to invest some time in developing those strengths, or whether you think, you know what, things that I'm great at aren't the things that you need. And then the last thing that we get people to think about is, and talk in these curious career conversations, is about development. So I might say, so Jane, if in the future I was to come and work with you and help support the things that you're doing, are there any things that you think would be useful for me to develop, any skills, any expertise, and being exposed to anything that you think would help me in the future if I was to come and work with you? And you might say, yes, Helen, we would want you to have X, Y, and Z. Now, again, I could proactively develop those things so that if there was an opportunity in the future, I'm prepared for it, I'm ready for it, and that doesn't sort of block my opportunities. So we encourage people not just to apply for jobs when you need them, but explore them in advance, you know, nurture those opportunities, because it's the thing that makes the roles come to you in the future.
That's great advice. Great advice. And then again, you know, a lot of our listeners are mothers, and I think sometimes you look at your CV and I get people saying, oh, but I haven't done anything, I've just had 5 years out. Well, actually, you probably have done quite a lot. And even just the networking and stuff that you do, soft networking that you do with other parents and things, is a great opportunity to put into practice some of the stuff you've just talked about. And I want to touch a bit more on this idea of parents. And, you know, some of the tactics you've just described, they sound like something I would do if I'm very confident, if I'm quite a confident person. Mm. But again, a lot of the stuff that I hear is around how women's confidence in particular, it takes quite a knocking if you've had a chunk of time out the workforce. What how do you support people in that, and what tips and confidence tricks can you help people with?
The slightly difficult part of this is that we don't really work on tricks and tips for confidence. So there are, you know, we have lots of different tips for things that we do, and daily career tips all the time. But for confidence, we try to get to the roots of confidence. So our definition of confidence is about having belief in yourself and other people believing in you too. And so if we operate at the level of like tips and tricks, what might happen is you might get like a little short-term confidence boost. So you might be able to do that presentation, or you might be able to ask that difficult question that you're a bit scared to do of a senior person. But the reality is you're going to leave that meeting or that day and go home and doubt yourself and question yourself and worry and be concerned. And so we haven't really developed long-term lasting belief in yourself. We've just given you a short-term confidence boost. So what we try to do is that long-term stuff, but it is a bit harder. And there are three areas that we help people with. The first we call confidence gremlins. I'll say them all briefly and then I'll kind of go back to them. But the first is confidence gremlins. The second is people's support systems. And the third is about your mindset for success. So if I go back to the confidence gremlins piece, this is all about really understanding the thoughts that hold you back from doing the things you want to do. So I'll give you one of my examples, and maybe one of my business partners' examples as well. I have some slightly warped mantra in my mind. My confidence gremlin is that if I ask people difficult questions, they'll think I'm a difficult person and they won't want to work for me or with me. So if I was to ask you a really challenging question, I might think, oh no, but then Jane won't think I'm a nice person. She thinks I'm not a nice person. She won't be on her podcast and all this kind of stuff. Now at work, that holds me back because it stops me asking for more budget for my team, or a pay rise for someone that works for me, or really challenging something that I don't think is right. And when I say it like that, I think, oh gosh, that's awful. But that's the reality of how my confidence gremlin shows up at work and holds me back. And over time in my career, that's going to mean that my voice isn't as strong, that I'm not going to drive the change that I want for myself and the people that work for me. And the also awkward thing is that whenever I see other people, like if we were working together, Jane, and I saw you ask a difficult question, I'd be like, amazing. Isn't Jane brilliant? Isn't she confident? It's just when it's me, I completely let my confidence gremlin run riot. My business partner, Sarah, has one about conflict. So she thinks that conflict is like war. whenever she sees in a meeting where there's some kind of conflict, she really sort of steps backward, or her immediate reaction is to withdraw from that conversation. Now, rationally, she knows that debate is a good thing because diverse thoughts are heard, but her confidence gremlin tries to really pull her out of that conversation. And so everyone has confidence gremlins. Some of the ones that we hear most often: I don't know enough, I'm going to get found out, I'm too old, I'm too young, I'm not good at numbers, I can't present. So many of them we hear. But what we try to work with people to do is, first of all, to be aware of it and to start to talk about it, because often they've just been, you know, driving you on autopilot. And just by starting to, you know, articulate it, we actually get people to draw their confidence gremlins so that we can make it tangible, so that we can start to really do something with. And then we start to think about how we can cage it, how you can go from sort of limiting beliefs to more limitless beliefs, how you can start to take some action and feedback, challenge some assumptions. And it is quite an involved process, but it's one of the things that really unlocks people from that thought that has been really negatively driving their actions. So that's the first one. Support systems are all about thinking about the people that you give and get support from. So confident people have a very healthy and balanced system of support, and we help people to sort of understand and map their support systems and spot where they might have some gaps and think about how they fill it. But I guess the shortcut to that is make sure you've got one or two people that you give support to regularly, because that helps you to feel confident about your worth. But also make sure you've got one or two people that you are getting support from, because that helps you to be resilient and to respond when stuff gets tough, and it does get tough. And the last thing's about success. So confident people have a realistic view of what they do well. Unconfident people, like, you know, they gravitate their thinking to, oh, I should have done this, I could have done this, that went wrong. And so we get people to just think about, again, a kind of a quick, maybe a bit of a tactic for people, is to think about at the end of a day, think about three things that you've done well that day, three successes. It doesn't all have to be the, I delivered an amazing project in 2020. It can be, do you know what, today I made every meeting on time, or my technology worked in every single meeting. Amazing.
Don't be ridiculous.
Who knows? Yeah, I'll save that one for another day.
That's really helpful. It's great ideas. And I, you know, I guess a lot, these sound like such powerful, I like to use the word tactics or pieces of real information that, you know, that you could use. Mm. But I guess how much squiggle is too much in your career? Or do you see it as limitless?
Yeah, a really good question. So, I mean, the research, independent of us, some research that was featured in the Financial Times recently said we're going to have as many as 4 different careers in our lifetime. So that's, you know, it's not about how many different jobs, it's just these 4 fundamentally different careers. I think I'm probably on number 2, I would say, at the moment, probably on career path number 2. Mm. So, you know, the research would say 4 is as squiggly as you can be. I don't like to put limits or sort of boundaries on people. Mm. You know, I think be as squiggly as you want to be. But what I would say is that the more squiggly you are, so the more changes and you're making in your career, whether that's in one organization or in several, the importance of your narrative, the strength of your brand, the how engaged and supportive your network are, those things all become very important because they're the things that stay consistent. So even though your squiggly career might have lots of change in it, you know, a strong brand, a clear narrative, an active and engaged network, they are the sort of assets, the career assets that you take with you, and they're very consistent and they help you to transition through the different squiggles.
And in your experience and what you see of people who do put this into practice, does taking a change of direction in your career have to mean taking a salary cut?
No, not always. No. I think it's very personal. So it depends on what you're doing and what you're selling about yourself. I think that if it's a really big change, there's likely to be some considerations for you. And what I mean by that is, if I'm changing organization and maybe I'm changing industry and organization at the same time, then I'm probably going to be on quite a steep learning curve. So even if I transition over to that role and I've managed to do it at the same salary or even at a higher salary, if that's what I've been able to do, then I might not progress as quickly as I would have done in the other organization because my learning curve might take a little bit longer. So maybe some of the achievements that I might have had in the previous role might not come to me quite as quickly. So I think there are transitions and pivots, those more significant moves come with some trade-offs sometimes. Mm. But I think that's where you've got to go back to what you really value. So where we talk about values, and the definition of values is what motivates and drives you. So if, you know, my 4 values, for example, my 4 core values are freedom, growth, energy, and achievement. And when I'm making career decisions, I make my career decisions based on the fulfillment of my values. Which one of those is going to give me more freedom, energy, growth, and achievement? Mm. And if in making a decision that plays, you know, gives me a higher rating on those 4 areas, but maybe gives me sort of lower pay or not a bonus or something else that I'm trading off, then I'm okay with that decision. Because I'm clear that the things that are most important to me, the things that motivate and drive me, are the things that have resulted in that decision. And now, and we all have a benchmark. We all have a, you know, we have to have this much salary or whatever for our baseline for our life. But over and above that, that's discretion and that's choice. And if that ties into your values, maybe you've got values about status or security or, you know, whatever they would be, then maybe it is an important part of your decision-making process. But if it isn't, then anything above your sort of baseline for the life that you want to live, I sometimes think that becomes a shiny object. So, you know, higher salaries, bonus, job titles, all that kind of stuff. Mm. They're shiny objects that can sometimes sway our decision-making in really unhelpful ways because shiny objects tarnish pretty quickly. Like if you're in a job that doesn't fulfill your values, but it's an extra this amount of money, then that tarnishes and what you're left with is a job that's not that fulfilling for you. And so it's not about ignoring it. We all have our baselines. We all have our sort of operating level for our life, but it's the discretionary bit above that and working out, you know, is that just a shiny object And actually, is the fulfillment of my values more important than me having that element above my baseline?
Yes. Yeah. No, it's very interesting discussion around that. I want to move on to networking.
Yes. Yes, sorry, the way you say it.
Because I'm one of the people, and I was talking about this with Viv Grosskopf last week about it is a word that makes me want to recoil in horror, and yet I probably do quite a lot of it informally. And I know you've got a big chunk in your book dedicated to talking about networking. Does it have to mean asking someone for a coffee or moving around a room with a glass of wine in one hand and a stack of business cards in the other? Or, you know, is there a new or a different way of networking where we can all come to find our own peace with it?
Yes, yes, there is. There definitely is. Though moving around a room with a glass of wine does sound nice, maybe without the business cards. but I do like wine. I do like people. Yes, there is. So first of all, let's not define networking as going to awkward events, talking to people that we don't really want to, and leaving as soon as we can. That's not going to help us think about it at all. We define networking as people helping people. And if you can really think about what is it that I've got to help people and how can I do that proactively, it really helps you to just think more positively about networking. And some people say, well, what have I got to give? Well, I mean, everybody has got maybe some time, support to give. There's lots of things in that way. But often we have our strengths to give. So, you know, I mentioned earlier some of my strengths about developing people and making things happen. If I spotted somebody, you know, if I thought, oh, Jane's going to launch a new podcast, what I could do is say to you, oh, Jane, should we sit down for half an hour? I'm really happy to share what we've done on the Squiggly Careers podcast over the last couple of years in case it helps you. That's an area of expertise that I've got. Or I might go to a past manager and say, look, one of the things that I'm really good at is developing people. If you'd like me to, you know, do a couple of coaching sessions for people in your team over the next 12 months while they're going through this period of change, the offer is there. I'm really happy to help. That's me leaning on some of my strengths. Mm. And if you can consciously build your network, so that's about me thinking, who do I want to really bring into my network in the next 12 months? And think about how can I be a person helping a person by doing that? It really helps. And something that is not ours, actually. I can't remember who said this, but it's always stuck with me as a way of thinking really practically about the network that you want to build. So there is no like great networks should have 50 or 100 people in them. Don't think about that. Great networks are built on people helping people, and they need to be active. So if you can keep a network of 20 people active, brilliant. If that's only 5 people, fine. But it's people helping people, and it needs to be active. Now, once you've got those principles as like your highest level thing, something quite practical, and I slightly cringe when I say this, but it is useful, is thinking about seeding, feeding, and weeding your network. Okay, just bear with me because I know it's really good. So think about in the next 12 months. So if I think in the next 12 months, what are the relationships that I might want to seed? Mm-hmm. So these are new people that I might want to bring into my active network of people helping people in the next 12 months. So I would think, you know, I'm recently become CEO of a small business. What would really help me is to start some relationships with other people who are CEOs of small businesses. They would be some relationships that I might want to seed. I might want to start those relationships. So I might think about, well, who could those people be and how could I get in touch with them and try and practically help them to seed that relationship? So that would be the first thing. The next one is about the relationships you want to feed. This is about your existing relationships in your network. So I would think, okay, in the next 12 months, who do I already have a relationship with, a career networking relationship with, and that I want to keep in my network in the next 12 months? So I might think about that past manager who I really want to become a mentor, or I might think about a peer who's been amazing for my confidence. And I might think about, okay, how could I feed that relationship? What could I give that person? Could I invite them to some of our events? Could I write a summary on how we deliver virtual learning that might help them? Just thinking about how could I keep giving them some kind of value. And the last thing is about weeding. Now, this is conceptual rather than an email that I'm going to send somebody to say that they've been weeded out of my network. But never do that. Never do that.
I'm going to shake with fear every time I get an email from you.
Jane, subject line, weed. No. Never do that. This is about thinking there might be some people that you've had in your relationship in your sort of networking relationships in the last 12 months that just aren't as relevant for you this year. So if I think about me and my career, you know, I've spent a lot of time in marketing in large organizations, and some of the people that would have been in my sort of career network then, you know, other marketing directors, you know, people doing marketing in different organizations or people in marketing agencies, they're just not quite as relevant to where my squiggly career is taking me right now. And so it's not a case of I'm going to just say, sorry, I can't speak to you for the next 12 months. You've been weeded out. But it's more conceptually, are there some people that you spent time with that you might just need to redefine that relationship? It might be more of a contact rather than a sort of a connection in your career network, because people helping people and maintaining an active network takes time. It takes being thoughtful. It takes, you know, conversations, different ways that you're going to engage with people. And so you really want to use your time and their time very consciously to make sure it's impactful for both of you. And when you know what you can give, and when you're also clear on what you want to get from people, and that doesn't have to be transactional. That doesn't have to be, I'll give you this if I get that from you. Yeah. When you're clear on those things, the give and the gain, and we always say give first, something wonderful happens called career karma. Career karma happens, which is basically where the good stuff just comes back to you. And it might not be this month, it might not be next month, but you basically get this positive credit in the bank where people might proactively sponsor you or proactively connect you to other people, or maybe they write you a LinkedIn recommendation, or it, I can't really describe it, but the good stuff happens when you give first.
Yeah, it's true. I've experienced it myself. I really have. I've been very fortunate with the people who've reached out and helped me, and hopefully I try and pay it back. But it, yeah, career karma is, it's a brilliant idea. I think one of my bugbears, and I get a lot of them, is when people just say, hi, can we just meet for a coffee? And that to me is sloppy networking. Why is it so important? Why is networking so important, especially for us as women, I think?
So many reasons. You can get so much from your network. So when we work with people, we get them to assess three different kind of networks: their current role network, their future role network, and their personal development network. And we've already talked about support systems as well. And when we talk about confidence, that's another form of network, those people that give you support. So, you know, if you've got a strong current role network, that helps you to be brilliant in the job that you're doing today. If you've got a strong future role network, that helps you to get opportunities for your future. And if you've got a strong personal development network, that helps you to learn and grow. And who doesn't want to be brilliant in their job, have opportunities come to them and have the support they need to learn, grow and develop? I mean, that's what networking helps you to do. It's not people knowing people. It's not how many people do you know on LinkedIn and how many awkward conversations have you had at events. That's just some kind of transactional conversations with people. This is about, you know, genuine help, and being helped is great for you, but actually it feels really nice to help other people too. And I think that's something that women are particularly good at, you know, the empathy, understanding what help people might need, being proactive in how we can support people. I think, you know, we often talk about networking as being man's territory, the old boys club, but I actually think if you redefine it as people helping people, I think this is something that women in particular are very skilled to do.
Yeah, we could go on talking for hours. It's such a fascinating subject, but conscious of time, we'll move on. I always ask interviewees two quite personal questions at the end of each episode. What's the one piece of career advice you'd give to your younger self, Helen?
Oh, it's a quote that, again, I don't know where it came from, but it stuck with me, and it came to me later in my career, and I think it would have helped me sooner. And it's to always run your own race. I find it quite comforting when people kind of get led, especially today with social media and things, by comparison, that idea that I have to look at other people to define what I should be doing or whether what I'm doing is good, and that I have to look outside of myself at what success looks like and compare myself to that. I don't find that helpful. And so run your own race to me means being clear about what you want to do and how you can add value, and really focusing on where you're going and not doing that in the context of trying to compare or compete with other people. That doesn't motivate me in the slightest.
Final question is, what can you recommend for our readers? What are you reading or watching or listening to at the moment?
Oh, so many different things. Books, I'm obviously a big reader, and I'm in this amazing position now. I get loads of books sent to me as well, which is a real privilege, because I feel like that, it's like the nicest thing ever when people send you books. So right now I'm actually reading Rebel Ideas by Matthew Syed, and I'm reading it for the second time because I'm going to talk to him for our podcast actually. But I love the book. Rebel Ideas is all about collective intelligence and cognitive diversity, which are kind of biggish words. But the way I think of it is about why it's really good that we don't all think the same, and why we need to talk to people who don't think the same as us, so that we have better ideas and we mitigate groupthink and we just come up with more interesting things. And so I found that book, I love it, and the way that he writes as well, he's a journalist, and he's just an amazing storyteller. So I love the concept, I love the practicality of it, but the way he writes, I find it a really easy and interesting read.
Brilliant. Well, there's a great tip. I think one for us all to add to our Amazon wish lists.
I know.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Helen. It's been really fascinating, really interesting talking about squiggly careers. So my thanks again to Helen for taking the time to talk us through the whole concept of the squiggly career. I hope while we are in this period of isolation, containment, lockdown, that actually we take time for ourselves, and podcasts are a great way of doing that. But one of the really important things is that we do look to the future and we do continue to plan for where we want our careers to take us next, for what that next job is going to look like. So I hope that in continuing to release these podcasts during this very difficult time, that it also encourages people to keep one eye on the future and keep planning for what might be. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. We're getting some amazing reviews on iTunes and they really, really help. So please don't forget to do that now.